one.
You can read into it what you want, but you know, I don't know that they realized that this female versus shemale segment was going to be as offensive as it was. And that's frightening, and that shows how much education we need to do in the media industry and to gay cisgender people about what crosses the line and why are these things offensive to trans people and how can you do better.
All right. Hey, we are here. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thank you for tuning in. We have got a pretty amazing show tonight. So many good people. We got them. We're lining them up down the street practically here. And needless to say, the topic of the moment, you know what it is. It's RuPaul. It's Drag Race. We've got some news to break tonight, which is really exciting. Which we will be getting to. We have Teek Milan, who is a senior strategist for GLAAD. We also have GLAAD spokesman Rich Ferraro joining us. They'll be in our first interview. And then in our second hour, we've got Kathy Renna, of course, is a well-known PR strategist for the LGBT community. She is also a former spokesperson for GLAAD and was the first head of their news media division. I hope I didn't screw that up, but okay. In any case, so we're going to be talking to Kathy to get her take on the RuPaul situation. We are also going to talk a little bit about a new anthology that's coming out, which I'm very excited about. I'm going to order myself a copy of this thing, I'll tell you. It's called Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. And if you're of a certain age, you probably remember when your mom had a copy of a book called Our Bodies, Ourselves. Well, there is a relationship there. And we're going to get into it with Kathy, and we're going to talk a little bit about what that's all about. We will be getting to her in our second hour, so be sure to stick around for that. It's going to be really, really good. Anyway, so let's talk. Let's talk a little bit. I want to lead off because we're going to get into RuPaul. We're going to take a deep dive into the RuPaul thing in a little while. But I want to start off with something else. We got a win today, gang. And it was not just a win for the LGBT community. It was a win, I believe, for progressives everywhere. I really do. Basically, what happened here was, as you may know, recently it was revealed that a man whose name is Brendan Eich, we actually talked about this a little bit on the show last week. His name is Brendan Eich. He's the inventor of JavaScript, which is a scripting language for computer scripting language that is very popular, very well used. He was appointed the CEO of the Mozilla Foundation, and they, of course, are the people who make the Firefox browser and the Thunderbird email client. I know they're also working on some kind of an operating system for mobile phones, but I think that's something that's coming in the future. It's not really available yet. But in any case, they appointed this guy, and it was revealed that he had donated $1,000 to Yes on Proposition 8. In other words, he gave $1,000 to the people who were trying to stop gay folks in California from getting married. Well, that did not sit well with our community, needless to say. But what was even more encouraging and more exciting for me was how the rest of the community, the Firefox and the Mozilla users and developers community, came together and said, this is not okay. We had websites that were actually blocking Firefox users. They had people, and I include myself in this because I did this, okay, who were saying, you know what, I'm not comfortable, as much as I love this browser, as much as I love this email program, I am not comfortable using them as long as this guy is in charge. Because even the thought that any money generated by my use of this browser somehow might somehow go to this guy and end up funding anti-LGBT hate, unacceptable. Okay, and I'll tell you something else. I'll tell you something else, because you know what? I could have lived with it. if they said, well, okay, this guy, he's not in charge. He's the chief technical officer. He's somebody in the upper management, but he's not, you know, but this guy was made CEO, and that makes it different. And the reason it makes it different is because a CEO is the voice and the face of a company, a public voice, a public face, the representation to the public of that institution. And when you have a guy who is funding hate against LGBT people, that cannot stand. And what was most encouraging for me was first, of course, the LGBT community was the ones who got riled up about this. But then folks from Mozilla, developers who work there, started chiming in. And users started chiming in. And people said, you know what, I can't use this browser as long as this guy is still in charge. I can't use this email client. So you know what I did? Well, I still had hope against hope that they were going to get this resolved. So I didn't take Firefox off my computer. I just stopped using it. Same thing with Thunderbird, which is the email client. I didn't take it off my machine because, I mean, I got 5 years worth of email on that fucking thing. Okay, I did not want to lose all that. Not that I would lose it. I mean, I transferred it over to another program, but I did not want to lose that. And frankly, I was hoping that they would resolve this quickly so I could go back to using the programs that I enjoy and that I'm familiar with and that I like. Well, I needed something. I needed something to replace these things with in the meantime, right? So I tried a bunch of things. I wasn't very happy. I dislike Chrome. I don't like Chrome. It doesn't work as well for me. So eventually, you know what I wound up with? Believe it or not, it's actually not bad. Opera. I started using the Opera browser. The browser is actually pretty good. It's pretty quick. And I liked it. I did not have a problem with that. What I did have a problem with and drove me batty was their email program. This thing is so buggy. It's unbelievable. Avoid, avoid, avoid. Do not use Opera's email program. Please, I beg you. Okay? What would happen is I would get emails. And, like, what would happen is some weird bug would – you know how when you get a new email in a lot of programs, you know, you get a little flag that pops up in the corner of your screen that says, hey, you have a new email, and here's who it's from and stuff like that. Well, I kept getting these flags. And just to give you an example, at one point while I was setting up tonight's interview, I was trading email a lot with Rich Ferraro from GLAAD yesterday. And – what happened was this Opera program kept flagging Rich's email, the same email that he had posted, he had sent to me like hours ago. But he kept flagging it as if it was new. So I would run, oh, something from Rich. I have to go check it out. And I would get there. It's like, no. I read this 4 hours ago, you know. And he kept doing it over and over and over, the same email. And it was bizarre. And it got to the point where I couldn't ignore because Rich is sending me something important. I want to make sure I have it. But it's like, you know, look, it was making me crazy. The way that they structure their folders for the email is nutty. I mean, I don't know. Maybe these Europeans have a different way of looking at things. I don't know. But it was really confusing. So I was struggling with this, and I've been struggling with this for days now. And then, thank God, this morning, well, maybe this afternoon, I look and I get the message that made my heart sing. Brendan Eich steps down as CEO of Mozilla. Yeah. The community did this. The community spoke out. They brought everyone else along. And the outcry and the unity of people who said we will not tolerate this came together and made this happen. Make no mistake about it. Mozilla would not have done this on their own. You made them do it. And for that, I have to applaud everybody. Okay, I have to applaud the users. I have to applaud the developers. I have to applaud everybody, the site, the sites, owners and managers and mistresses and masters who took steps to speak out. You know, I mean, it was like, it was real. I'll tell you. I mean, again, I promised I was going to avoid talking about this until we get into our interviews because there's so much to say. But you know what? I would love to see this kind of effort around RuPaul. Seriously. If you can do it here, you can do it there too. You can. It can be done. This is how it is done. Because we have to stand up. And it's not just about RuPaul, and it's not just about Brandon Eich, and it's not just about this idiot or that bigot or this one or that one or whatever. What it is about standing up and saying every single time something like this happens, no, this is unacceptable. We will not stand for it. We will not tolerate it. And we will not support those who engage in it. That is what we have to do with RuPaul. That is what we just did with Mozilla. And you know what? I learned new respect for Mozilla. Because you know what? They made a mistake. It seemed like a good idea at the time. And everybody's entitled. Come on. This is a company that it's hard not to love because of the way they do business, the way they put their users first. It's hard not to love this company. And when they realized that this was not going to be acceptable to their users, they took steps and they did what they had to do. Kudos. And I am now proud to be, once again, a Firefox user. Gosh, I want to throw that phone through the wall, but all right. In any case, I just wanted to make this point because, you know, I mean, I, on the one hand, let's be careful here. Let's not get nasty about this, okay? I'm not going to celebrate some guy losing his job. I'm just not going to do it. Speaking of somebody who's looking for work, practically begging for work at this point, I'm not going to do that. I'm not that cruel. I can't do that. I can't celebrate somebody losing their job and their way to make a living. But what I can celebrate is the way the community came out and said, this is not acceptable. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, nobody, if this guy turned around and said, well, I'm going to go back to being what he was before this, his chief technical officer, I couldn't care less. Go ahead. But when you are talking about the voice and the face of a company, I'm sorry, that's different. It matters. It makes a difference. When you are the person in charge, it makes a difference. It just does. And so I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged because if we can do it here, if we can go and say, and this was very civil, nobody was calling anybody any names. Nobody was, but people said, I'm sorry. But and I'll tell you what I said. Because I had a communication with somebody who works for Mozilla or works with people who work for Mozilla. I'm not quite sure. And she was making the point that, well, there are a lot of developers at Mozilla who feel strongly about this and their voices are not being heard. And she has had an excellent point because she was right. All we were hearing was users, users, users. We weren't hearing about the people who actually work in that building with this guy. Okay. And I said to her, I said, you're absolutely right. These people have not been heard from. They do deserve a voice. But let me tell you about another voice that's not been heard. Early adopters of Firefox, people like me, okay, when this thing first came out, maybe 3-6 months after, I was on there. I was using this thing. I went and donated $20 to Mozilla to get a Firefox t-shirt. Okay. I was one of those early supporters, an early adopter. I love the idea. What they're trying to do is make this open source and make this all about you and your online experience, not about how many fucking widgets they can sell you, like Google and all these other Internet Explorer and all these guys. Okay. These guys are putting the user, not the bottom line, first. And it shows in everything they do. And I'll tell you, I love that. I love that. Because that's what I think. You take care of your users first. And these guys have been doing that for years. And so giving that browser up, I did not want to. I mean, yes, there are other things that you can do. There are other browsers that will function. I mean, it's not like Firefox is the only browser out there. But it's the best one, as far as I'm concerned. And that's the, it's, I'm comfortable with it. I like it. I know all its features. I use it like playing the piano. I know everything. I'm comfortable with it. I've been using it all this time. I don't want to use Opera. I mean, it's not a bad browser. I'm not bashing Opera here. But I want to use what I want to use. And so having to feel, and I mean, I'm getting a lot more long-winded than I was when I spoke to this person, but basically what I said was, you know what? It fucking sucks to have to feel morally obligated not to use programs that you love and to turn your back on a community, on a company that you support and that you want to continue supporting. So don't forget that either. We matter too, and we've been out there, and we've been singing the praises of Mozilla for years. And so I felt really good, because I feel more comfortable than ever that Mozilla is a company that lives its values, and it makes me feel good to use their products. So take that for whatever it's worth. And I will tell you this. If you don't use Firefox today, if you use some other kind of browser, if my recommendation means anything to you, go check it out. I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. It's fast. It's easy to use. There are plenty of great extensions. I think it's the best browser out there. I do. Okay? And continually getting better. So I say, check it out. Take a look at it. If you want a good browser, Firefox is a good choice. And I'll tell you something else. If you're having problems with your email, Thunderbird, I have never had a problem with Thunderbird. It is really good. I have yet to run across a bug that really did cause me a major problem. You know, it's just easy to use. You run the thing and it works. You know, you don't have to put up with these weird bugs that they're clearly left in by these commercial companies that clearly don't have much of the way of quality control, that are more concerned about, you know, maximizing clicks to their, you know, e-commerce sites than they are about serving their users. I like the way they do business. I like the way their products work. And I want to support that. I want to support that way of doing business. And that's why it was so hard for me. And I am so glad that this has resolved itself. And you know, I hope it resolves itself in a similar way with RuPaul. And at least not that I'm aware. Nobody's looking. And I promised I wasn't going to get into it, but that's okay, because we're about 2 minutes from our first break, when we're going to come back with Teek Milan, Rich Ferraro of GLAAD, in an interview that we did, actually it was pre-recorded earlier this afternoon, and listen carefully, pay attention, they're going to break some news here, okay, so pay attention, serious now, okay, this is good stuff, we will get into it, and then once we come back from our break, we've got about maybe a few minutes after that in between, and then our second hour, we've got Kathy Renna, and we will get into this all with her. Plus, we're going to talk about trans bodies, trans selves. I had a chance to read a little bit, kind of a sampler of some of the stuff that's in there. I didn't get a lot of chance to get into it deeply because I've been insanely busy putting together this show for the last 2 days. But what I read, I really like. And I will tell you, my best endorsement, I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I'm ordering a copy of this thing for myself, okay? So if that means anything to you, and it's not particularly cheap, you can get an electronic copy for less than a hard copy. But if you can buy the hard copy of this, I would recommend it. This looks – it looks great. It looks great. I don't want to talk too much about it because I want to save that for our interview with Kathy. But it is now time for our first break. And we are going to play a song that I chose earlier, had Mr. Mike go grab for us, because I think it sums up a feeling here that a lot of us are having. And I wanted to play it, particularly before GLAAD. So enjoy. This is from the movie Better Than Chocolate, and it's called, you know what it is, don't you? I'm Not a Fucking Dragon.
Hey, everybody, if you please take your seats, our very own Judy Squires.
Can't you just say yes, dear? And she and her and sister to my sender, transgender.
I'm the voice of spring. I bring you some little goodies from the forest.
You want girl? You got a shemale.
Is it a Sheila or a shemale?
Shemale.
Female. That's wrestler China.
I'm still not sure whether I got it right or wrong.
Yeah, me neither.
All right, we're back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. And next on the show, I'm very excited, Teek Milan, who is a senior media strategist for GLAAD, and as well, one of the contributing authors to something we're going to get into a little bit later in the show with Kathy Renna, Trans Bodies, Trans Selves. And Teek, the reason I wanted to have you on the show tonight was because you are a media strategist for GLAAD. Of course, we've been spending a lot of time talking about RuPaul's Drag Race, which, of course, is we've had a problem with these folks. This is a long-standing problem that hasn't gotten a lot of attention, these slurs. And I know that GLAAD reached out to RuPaul and Logo and this production company. Certain promises, as far as we understand, were made to board chair Jenny Boylan about the use of these slurs, which then it appeared, at least to me, that Logo and RuPaul just reneged on. And so this, to me, makes it a little bit different than most of the times that GLAAD goes out. They go and they make an effort, and the people who are offending respond, and there's usually a positive result there. This time, it's very different. They basically gave us the middle finger. And so what happens now? What do we do?
Well, first, let me just say, you know, Rich Farrell, our VP of Communications, is also on the call, and he was definitely instrumental in working our response and working with the producers and stuff from Logo. So I think I'll let him talk about, you know, what we did exactly and what it was.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, Rich.
So again, and Becky, I just wanted to make sure that you knew that Rich was on the line, too.
Yes, I apologize.
So, no worries at all. Yeah, but I think we wanted to, you know, I've of course been reading the post that you wrote and have really, you know, benefited from reading your post throughout the years. I've been at GLAAD for 6 years. So when I heard from you and from many in the community, I think it's important that we as GLAAD let folks know, like, what our work was around this and maybe, like, what can happen coming out of this. So after the really offensive female versus shemale segment aired, you know, as anti-trans content too frequently airs in the media today. We did reach out to contacts at Logo, and we also reached out to the producers of the show. The producers of the show are from World of Wonder. I'm not sure if you're too familiar with World of Wonder, but they have brought some really amazing and thought-provoking and groundbreaking trans images to the media today. They're the folks behind behind Becoming Chaz, behind the wonderful documentary from several years ago, Trans Generation, behind Trans American Love Stories starring Calpurnia Adams, and behind Sex Change Hospital, the reality program about Dr. Marcy Bowers, who actually sits on GLAAD's board today. So when we realized that this was a World of Wonder production, my thought was always to have a conversation with these folks and wonder, what did they get wrong with this segment on the RuPaul's Drag Race show 2 weeks ago? Because they don't have that history of anti-trans content. They're not Fox News. They've done really compelling programming for transgender people and to educate people about what it's like to be trans today. So we did have a conversation with them. We did have a conversation with Logo. And those conversations, and I've been doing this work for a long time at GLAAD, sometimes it happens where people make decisions very quickly and come out with statements. In this case, it took a while. And I was disappointed that it took a while. They knew that GLAAD was disappointed. And one thing that was wonderful is that we were able to share feedback from people in the trans community. We were able to share posts that ran on Slate and Trans Advocate and Advocate.com, because all of that helps frame this for these media folks, for the showrunners, for the communications people at Logo. It's important to hear not only from GLAAD, but from the whole community. And I think one thing that I've noticed in the past 2 weeks since the segment ran was that, unfortunately, they weren't hearing from the community. These posts were running, but even on Twitter, people weren't really tagging the show on Twitter. They weren't tagging Logo or RuPaul. They were certainly tagging GLAAD, and we were certainly listening, but sometimes I think it's really important for the community to come together and let the end user know, let the Logos of the world, let the RuPaul Drag Race showrunners know, as well as letting GLAAD know. It helps us do our work. So fast forward to when they do release their statements. And, you know, I have seen a lot of PR statements, and that's what this was. This was a PR statement. I think it is significant that someone like RuPaul says, I'm newly sensitized, because we all know a few years ago what he said about the word, the anti-trans T word. He defended his use of it, and now, you know, and I don't know if it's in his heart or if it's for PR, I hope that that he really has read these blog posts, heard from us, heard from the community, and maybe he is going to, like, come into today and not 20 years ago where he's living, and to say that, okay, I'm not going to use these slurs anymore. Logo's statement did not say that they were not going to use these slurs on the program going forward, but I'd be shocked if you saw it. I think that this has caused a PR issue, but also that when you're thinking about Logo, which claims to be an LGBT channel, they have an obligation to serve the full community, and I definitely plan to hold them to that. I also think that this is a good opportunity for them to tell more stories about trans women, both on Logo and through their other various platforms like New Now Next.
Absolutely. And all that stuff is good. But I would point out to you, Rich, that one of the reasons why, when you give that list of all this great work that WOW has done, Worlds of Wonder has done, it makes it twice as angering. Because then you say, well, you know what? These people do know better. They've proven they know better. They've produced media that demonstrates that they know better. And so how are we not supposed to conclude that these folks said, we don't care. We're doing it because money. I mean, how do we not reach that conclusion with these folks based on the history that you just gave us?
I think it really frightens me, and it's not surprising that these are folks who have done really powerful, and, you know, typically I deal with, like, showrunners or, like, celebrities who have done great stuff for gay, cisgender people. These are people who have done great stuff for the trans community. They didn't, you know, and you can read into it what you want, but, you know, I don't know that they realized that this female versus shemale segment was going to be as offensive as it was. And that's frightening, and that shows how much education we need to do in the media industry and to gay, cisgender people about what crosses the line and why are these things offensive to trans people and how can you do better.
I think our end goal when, like, you know, when I watched the segment that night on that Monday night and then the next morning, my end goal as Glad was to make sure that a segment like this one didn't happen again.
Right,
and
but yet
I
it
would
did.
Be surprised
yet
if we
it
saw
did the very
it
next
happen
week.
Again.
So, I mean, how do you respond to people who you try and approach them in the way that you guys have done successfully for years, and they basically just say, no, we're not doing it. We don't care. I mean, how do you respond to that? That's what I'm trying to get from you guys is, well, what do we do now? How do we strike back and say, no, this is not okay?
Let me just jump in. I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, every fight that we have here at GLAAD is not, and we're not going to get this incredible win, right? And this may be one of those instances where we're not getting the exact answer that we want, but you know, we're hoping, and we really do think that on long term, that this is definitely going to have a long term effect on how the show is run and the language that they're using in the show. And also, I think it's important for us to point out that the trans community is really enjoying a surge in visibility right now in mainstream media. I mean, despite the work that World of Wonder has done and RuPaul and all of that, the lived experience of trans people is something that is very new to the mainstream community. So if you look at this as like a collective coming out of the trans community, you know that when you come out, you have to deal with awkward conversations, you're dealing with horrible questions, you're dealing with embarrassing moments, and this is happening on a national stage in a very public way. And everybody that we have considered allies or have had our backs or have done all these wonderful things, they don't get it all the way. And I personally don't expect them to, so I think it's important for us to understand this is not a sprint, this is a marathon. And people are going to get it wrong. People that we've had respect for, that we respect, and that we care about are going to get it wrong sometimes, particularly when you're dealing with humor. Humor is a really, you know, precarious place in that it's supposed to be this space where everything is allowed, if it's a parody, if it's satirical, and it's not. And it can be really nuanced and complicated when you're trying to address these things, you know, in the way that we are. But I think it's important to know that these things are going to happen. This isn't the first time this is going to happen. This isn't the last time this is going to happen. And we're going to continue to do the work that we're doing. But, you know, this is something that's not – the changes are going to happen overnight.
Yeah. And I always focus on that.
You know, I have to tell you, I'm hearing from you guys a long-term strategy, and that's great. But the reality is, and I think this is what the trans community is frankly furious about, this is happening right now, today. And it's with, frankly, malice aforethought. These folks have basically thumbed their nose at the community and said, we don't care what you think. And I think that given that there's an energy around this issue now, today, people are paying attention. People want to get off their butts and do something. And so my question to you is, where do we direct that energy?
Right. And you know, I think one is to see if the show continues airing segments like Female versus Shemale, that offensive game that they aired 2 weeks ago. There's a lot of, you know, I've heard a lot of discussion saying that there are anti-trans slurs constantly on RuPaul's Drag Race. There aren't. Now, RuPaul has defended his use of the slur off the show, but on the show, I don't know of those instances where the word tranny was used. If that was the case, I think we'd be seeing something different. But I think we also have to look now. This is now on the radar of the show producers. It's on the radar of Logo. They've said that there's some positive momentum. They haven't said, no, we're never going to use anti-trans slurs on the show again. They haven't said that publicly, right? But yeah. It seems like there's positive momentum. So do I think there will be another Female versus Shemale segment on the show? No. And if there is now, they're on record as positive momentum, and I would imagine that those two companies would not want to go back on their word.
Okay. Well, then let me ask you, honestly, you know, because this is a company that, at least as far as the public statements that we've heard coming from GLAAD over the last couple of weeks, they've already gone back on their word once. Why are we confident that they're going to keep their word this time?
And when was the going back on their word?
Well, Jenny Boylan posted something, I guess it was about a week ago, where she said that she had reason to believe that the use of the anti-trans slurs will stop. And then literally within 24 hours, they had been questioned on that. I think it was by BuzzFeed. And they responded, that they were refusing to make that commitment. So I think we've gotten very conflicting, messages from people.
A bit of like the media industry where, you know, they're not going, they obviously feel uncomfortable making that commitment to the public. And that's disappointing because I think that these shows and these networks should send a message, and it's not a hard message to send. No, you're not going to see anti-transgender slurs on Logo. I've spoken with many other networks that are not LGBT specific like Logo, and they're willing to say things like that. There was a famous instance a couple of years ago with MTV and Jersey Shore, where there were not only anti-trans slurs, but the reality stars on Jersey Shore referred to a trans woman as it. As a result, they pulled that episode. They pulled the segments in question so that they didn't air anymore because MTV doesn't stand for that kind of stuff. And it was an education moment for MTV. We were able to talk to them. We were able to talk to producers at MTV, at showrunners, at people who were going to be editing these programs, and we got this on their radar, and they saw all of the public backlash to this disgusting segment, and now you're not seeing things like that on Jersey Shore. You can say what you want about the rest of Jersey Shore, but seeing transgender women being referred to as it and being dehumanized and like,
yeah, well, personally, even being from New Jersey, I refuse to watch Jersey Shore, but that's neither here nor there. But another thing I wanted to ask was, I have to admit, you know, I'm not particularly confident that these people are honest. And I think they've shown a pattern of saying, you know, we don't really care because our audience doesn't care. Essentially, and I don't know about you guys. I know you follow the web, but I mean, if you've been reading some of the comments about the web, even on my own articles, there have been a lot of gay folks who have been coming. Oh, RuPaul is a wonderful ally to the community, and you people are idiots, and how dare you? Blah 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 blah. Just seeing a lot of that. There's a lot of animosity. So, and basically, there seems to be a perception among certain segments of our community that, oh, this is just these trans people getting up in arms about nothing again, and everybody shouldn't pay attention. Let RuPaul do whatever he wants because he's wonderful. And, you know, I see a lot of that. And how do we turn that around? How do we get these kind of people on our side?
Well, you know, what we're doing now is we're working on a campaign where it's going to be drag queens and trans women standing in solidarity talking about anti-trans slurs and how it's wrong. And we want this to be a lighthearted video campaign that's less chastising and more using this as a teachable moment, because I think when we do it like that, it makes it more palpable to people, particularly the people that you're talking about. RuPaul's audience, which is usually gay men, who seem to think that they've, you know, co-opted this anti-trans slur, that it's okay, and that, you know, because we're all in this LGBT spectrum, that, you know, it's okay to make fun of, you know, the one aspect of this community, which is not. So we're hoping that this video came with social solidarity between drag queens and trans women, let the viewing public see that there is a difference, and that, you know, there's a more sophisticated and there's a smarter way to be humorous. Right? So hopefully, we're hoping that this is going to reach, you know, this target audience, and that it can start to change people. It can start to have a paradigm shift around how we think about trans people within our LGBT community. And once we can have this cultural shift, this can trickle down to having influences by like policy change and things like that. You know, we hope it gets to the point where saying the T word is just as a taboo as it is to say the F word. You know, because 15 years ago, a comedian could get on stage and excuse me, say faggot this and that, and it was okay. But now you can't. And it's going to be that way for anti-trans slurs as well. But as I said before, it's going to take a lot of work and it's going to take some time.
But I have to stop you there for a second, Teek, because, you know, I grant you with tranny, absolutely, that's a word that has only recently become seen as a slur. But you know what? I came out in 1997. She-male was a slur then. It's a slur now. It's a slur all the time in between. From my day with the women that I came out with, we consider that the equivalent of being called a prostitute. That's what that is. And it was like that in 1997. And so I do not see where this is a matter of evolution. This is a matter of a guy who knows better and is choosing to do it anyway for money. How do you respond?
Well, I'd say like this, you know, Glad doesn't have a battery in anybody's back. So we can't control what's going to come out of someone's mouth. All we can do is react to it and try to find a teachable moment and try to make it better. And also, and just to say, I don't think being a prostitute or being a sex worker is a slur. There are lots of trans women who are involved in sex work because of need of survival. So I don't think it's fair.
I'm sorry, Keith. That's a modern interpretation. That's not a 1997 interpretation. That's the way we look at prostitutes and sex workers today. That is not how we looked at them 20 years ago. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying for right now, just to put these two together as slurs, I don't think it's fair, particularly to those women who are engaged in this type of work for whatever reason. But what I'm saying is that, you know, we can create these campaigns and, you know, we can hope for the best and we can galvanize the community, but we can't tell what somebody to say one thing and not another. You know, it's not that we have control over what RuPaul says. We don't have control over that. All we can do is try to guide the conversation towards what's best for the community.
Right.
I really hope that we're going to see some positive feedback from this, and that they're going to stick to their word, and that we're not going to see any more anti-trans slurs on this show or anywhere else. And also, you know, this is really important work that we're doing as far as these slurs, but there's so many other things that we have to think about when it comes to the trans community, right?
Absolutely.
Trans women are 11 times more likely to be murdered, and a lot of that is because of the language, because we're using this language that dehumanizes these women, and so now they're out in the world and people think that they're not worthy to be loved, and that they can be sexually assaulted, they can be murdered and discarded. And at Glad, you know, we're on top of that. We have the doubly victim guide. Whenever there's a journalist that victimizes a trans woman who has been killed, we're on it. Whenever there's an article where people are misgendered or there's some salacious coverage, you know, we're on it. So there's just so many different ways in which we have to look at moving the community forward, and this is just one of them.
Absolutely. But, you know, there's the thing. I think one of the reasons why there was such a backlash towards GLAAD over this was because you guys are a victim of your own reputation. That in the past, you guys have responded. And I've witnessed this. Rich knows. I have witnessed this with my own eyes, where I was involved with a situation with an actor named Greg Grunberg a few years ago. I posted something on the Valerico Project. These guys went into action. It was amazing to see how quickly they snapped into action. So I think the community has come to expect that kind of action. When we didn't see it here, people were saying, well, why not? What's different about this situation other than this guy is a famous gay celebrity and the other guy was a straight guy? I think people are asking that question.
Yeah, that is a totally valid question. I mean, we have worked with gay celebrities in the past, though, so I don't know that you can look at it. I never look at any of these instances of celebrities, media outlets, corporations that do something anti-LGBT as the same. It's very case by case and nuanced as well. But I mean, it reminded me when I saw this segment. It reminded me of something that happened on Watch What Happens Live with Andy Cohen, where he played a man or a Kardashian or a Kardashian man. So essentially, a similar to female or she-male, except it was a Kardashian or a, quote, Kardashian man. And one of the photos that they zoomed in on some body part was Carmen Carrera, a known trans woman who actually came from RuPaul's Drag Race. And Andy Cohen said, no, she's a Kardashian man. Well, ooh, if you know Carmen Carrera, she's not going to take that. So he called us up, and the next day on his show, he apologized to her, and he affirmed that trans women are women. I think having that kind of message come from Andy Cohen was a strong one. And it was something that, you know, we were not visible at GLAAD, even though we were talking to Bravo, even though we were talking to Carmen, because sometimes our work has to be behind the scenes. Sometimes our work is visible, sometimes it's not visible, but the commitment is there, and hopefully the end result will be there. In this instance of RuPaul's Drag Race, there has been movement. And, you know, like I said a few times now, I think we're going to be surprised if there's anti-trans content on that show going forward. And I think if there's not, if this time next year, you know, you don't see segments like female versus she-male, like that signals movement not only
in the industry, but like just acceptance of trans women, especially coming from someone like RuPaul, who has, you know, defended his so-called defended his use of these disgusting words. He's now rethinking that, and that, I mean, it took him his whole life to rethink that, right? And again,
yeah, but,
I haven't spoken to him, so I don't know where he is on this, but the people that we have spoken with.
Yeah, because I have to say that I have not seen anything from these folks over here that lead me to believe in any way that they care what they're doing or that they have any incentive or to change. I mean, I hope you're right, but everything that you're talking about here apparently has happened behind closed doors. And, you know, now we have to take a wait and see, which I hope you are 100% right. But you know, again, when the last time we heard something, it turned out not to be so. And obviously that was a miscommunication or something. But I'll tell you, I mean, their credibility is not high with me. I got to say, but we do have to wrap up. I want to thank you so much for coming on. Is there anything else you guys want to let the community know about this situation, how you're working on it and how they can participate?
Yeah, you know, it's all about that end goal. And this is like, you know, especially the fact that this came from two guys who have done really great work for the trans community and have presented very strong images. We've been talking about doing a bigger campaign for gay men in Hollywood to be like, hey, here are slurs that you need to know about. These are slurs to trans women. Here are the issues that are facing trans women today. And we've been brainstorming that campaign, talking to different partners for it. And I think you will see that now it's fast track because we've heard, I mean, we definitely feel the pressure from the community to fast track a campaign like that and get out in front of this issue because sometimes these show creators and the reporters that we work with, the producers, they might not do their research or ask the trans community before they put these segments on and these slurs on the air, and they need to. And if not, they're going to be hearing from us, but they should also hear from you, the listeners of your show, and the full trans community as well, too. But that campaign, I think you will see it in coming months, and hopefully we'll be able to work with you on it, too.
Absolutely. Well, we're certainly going to be doing whatever we can on this show. I will promise you that. Teek Milan, Rich Ferraro, I want to thank both you guys for coming on the show and talking to us and letting the community know a little bit about what's going on. I hope you'll come back and keep us posted as these things are going on. Let people know how we can make this happen, how we can participate, because, you know, we want you guys, you know, we respect you guys, we love you guys, we want you to be shoulder to shoulder with us on this. So thank you for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you so much.
Let's get out of here. Look, Emerald City is closer and prettier than ever.
You're out of the woods, you're out of the dark, you're out of the night. Step into the sun, step into the light.
I bring you some little goodies from the park.
I'm the voice of spring.
I bring you some little goodies from the park.
You won.
Uh-oh.
Hello.
Hello. What's going on?
Welcome to your show. I'm just following instructions.
What happened?
I don't know. Guess who's on the line?
Oh, okay. Well, then we have Kathy Renna, who is, of course, a LGBT PR strategist who also is a former spokesperson for GLAAD and was their first news media director. Kathy, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Well, you know, the reason I wanted to have you on, of course, obviously, you've worked with GLAAD. You've worked on these kind of issues before. You're a well-respected media strategist who deals with this kind of thing all the time. And I wanted to get your take on this RuPaul's Drag Race situation? And do you think that the way this is being handled, both by GLAAD and by the community, is this being handled the right way, do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, the right way. What's the right way, right? I think it's been interesting to watch, you know, sort of from the outside, and then I decided to write my Huffington Post piece and toss myself in the mix around some of the stuff that's been going on around trans issues, but not into the specifically into the RuPaul controversy. And what's interesting to me is that this is not something new, you know, that this is something that has been on the show prior. But like you said in your Valerico piece, you know, it really speaks to one of the challenges of GLAAD, and I was there for a long time, so I know and understand this, and watched it, you know, happen sort of over the years, is how do you handle it when it's someone within our own community who's doing or saying things that are offensive to many within our own community. So it's like, well, how do you take care of that, you know, that cousin at Thanksgiving comes out with a comment of, you know, it's really offensive. And I think it does put GLAAD in an awkward position on some level, but at the end of the day, as I experienced many times when I was there, you have to really do your best to leverage the fact that you have access to folks that, you know, maybe, you know, average individuals in the community don't have access to, and try and really help them understand what's going on. And so that's probably what's been happening behind the scenes a ton, right? But, you know, we also can't fool ourselves and think that, you know, GLAAD has control over what RuPaul does or says. I mean, the show, at the end of the day, is the most popular, and it's the most probably money-making, I would assume, show on Logo, which is a struggling network. And, you know, so I think they're, you know, it's a very complex thing. But the bottom line is they should have spoken out about this publicly as an organization earlier, in addition to doing what I'm sure they're doing behind the scenes in terms of trying to sit down and talk to folks at Logo and talk to RuPaul and trying to, you know, do what they're supposed to be doing as a media advocacy and media watchdog group.
Right. And you know, one of the things, and I got into this with Teak and Rich Ferraro a little earlier, one of the things I think that was upsetting to the trans community, and you know this as well as anybody, is that traditionally when GLAAD takes on this kind of situation, they are lightning quick. They leverage social media. They really know how to bring these things around to positive conclusions relatively quickly. I've seen it with my own eyes. I think there was an expectation there that this was going to be handled in a similar way.
That would be my constructive criticism, that they should have come out publicly much earlier. In fact, you know, given the history where they've actually honored the show, given the show an award, you know, it is that challenging balance with, you know, if you want to call it entertainment, infotainment, whatever, you know, the kind of media that is, you know, it's not news, it's not journalism. My job was a lot easier because journalists have a job, and part of the job is to be fair and to be accurate, and frankly, a lot of their job falls very much in sync with GLAAD's mission. When it comes to, you know, things like entertainment and more subjective stuff, you do really have to, you know, make a stand. And I agree. I think the other interesting thing, though, is that the larger LGB, I'll take the T out for a second, not LGB community, you know, it's not going to get as up in arms as they would over, you know, Alec Baldwin, you know, calling someone an anti-gay slur, you know? And that's GLAAD's job, too, is to help educate the larger community about this stuff. I know that's what I spent a tremendous amount of my time doing, and I still do, whether it was on bi issues or trans issues or lesbian issues, for that matter, or, you know, how misogyny and sexism are very much entwined and really often the source of much of the homophobia we see. I mean, trying to get people to talk about things at a more substantive level, that's GLAAD's job. And so, you know, yeah, I wish they had come out earlier, because they could have rallied more of the troops and they could have gotten more attention from the larger mainstream media, because that's the thing that really gets things moving, when the mainstream media pays attention.
Right. I have to agree with you there because, I mean, personally, and I'm not even talking about anybody else because I know this has been a longstanding issue, but, I mean, I wrote an article for the Huffington Post about this very issue when RuPaul went on Michelangelo Signorelli's show and was horribly awful transphobic, announced that trans people shouldn't be upset and that Lance Bass should have used it as a slur and said, F you tranny jerk. Or I mean, it was unbelievably horrible, and it was live media, and frankly, I mean, I wrote about it. We got, I mean, there was nothing from GLAAD, nothing. And, you know, I wonder if we had started then, if we had, you know, if GLAAD had taken action then when this was first becoming an issue and called him out on this, maybe we'd be, wouldn't be an issue today.
Right. We would be having this conversation. I mean, it's really interesting to me, too, because, like, I, you know, my experience is my experience. And I've been involved, I was just started getting involved with GLAAD as a volunteer in Washington, D.C. in 1989. So we were talking a long time ago. So, and I was there until 2002. So, you know, I've not been there for about a decade, right? But the reality was, in the early 90s, we were chapters, not a national organization. But our chapter was, amazingly, like, the first one to have a transgender board member. Jessica Xavier, who some folks listening may know, she did extraordinary activism in the 90s in Washington, D.C., worked on the murder of Tyra Hunter, which was just awful, and was my, frankly, my educational sort of moment that really, you know, propelled me to better understand and really become an ally and want to do more around trans issues. You know, she was the first openly trans board member of a GLAAD chapter, you know, and that was in the early 90s. And but as the organization grew and developed, you know, you get really big, and it's the challenge is you have to learn how to balance the activism with the starry-eyed, you know, feeling that you get when you're on the red carpet and you've got all these celebrities that, and it's great that they support us and they want to do that, and I do that a lot in my work with clients, but you can't let it get in the way. In fact, it should make it easier when you have someone who you know and can access that most people can't, to be able to say, hey, this is offensive, and this is why, and, you know, we're going to help you out here because you're offending a lot of people. Like, I've had that conversation with plenty of people in positions of power, whether celebrities or journalists. And that's the thing that I'm trying to figure out. And I think you hit the nail on the head with the political piece. And I think that's what, you know, when you talk about the struggle for a GLAAD soul, I think that's the challenge that the organization is presented with all the time.
You know, and then I want to ask you about that because you're somebody, you know, who, let's be honest, was there to see what I referred to in the piece as the old GLAAD, as the organization that was chiefly focused on, let's be honest, lesbian and gay issues, on lauding lesbian and gay celebrities. You know, a lot of what it seemed at that time that GLAAD was doing, and I know there was a lot of stuff that was under the radar, but for visibly within the community, what it seemed like GLAAD was mainly doing was holding parties for rich gay people, is what it seemed like they were doing at that time.
I think that was that can often be the perception, right? Because that's the sexy stuff that gets attention. The reality was a lot of us were just in the trenches, especially the folks who did the more local regional work. They weren't, that wasn't sexy. I mean, we tried to highlight it as much as we could, but, you know, that was just not as sexy and interesting to lots of people, including donors, frankly. I mean, I would challenge, you know, the organization all the time internally, and frankly was listened to and then appreciated for when I said, look, you know, we need to have, you know, more inclusive categories in the Media Awards nominations, or we need to be reaching out and doing more around bi issues or trans issues or women's issues or, you know, issues related to people of color in the community. But it's really, really challenging because as big and, you know, fabulous as it is to have those events, most of these organizations, now I don't know, then I do know, we didn't have the resources that we wanted to really be able to do as much as we wanted to. But, you know, you do the best you can, and you have to be willing to be held accountable for it, and I always was. I mean, the other challenge, which I always find interesting, is that, you know, when we put ourselves out there as activists, whether we are paid or not, you know, there's you can't win for losing. Somebody's going to find something wrong with what you've done, which is fine. I mean, I got criticized at GLAAD for not being aggressive enough with things. Like when we were doing the Dr. Laura campaign, and she was awful. We all know how awful Dr. Laura was, right? So there's a whole group of people who said you're not being aggressive enough. You know, and so they started another organization called StopDrLaura.com. And so John Arvosis and Robin Tyler and other folks, what ended up happening was we ended up working together because we were like, look, you know, there, as an organization, this is how far we are able to and willing to take it. You know, that's why you had ACT UP and you had, you know, MFAR. That's why you have, you know, the organizations that are in the streets and, as I say, the organizations that are in the suites. You know, that all of those things are important, but I think what we need to learn to do better, we still haven't got it quite yet. In fact, I think we're not doing as well as we sometimes used to, is coordinating and working together and understanding that while our tactics may be different, our goals are the same. So that, you understand what I'm saying? I think that's really a challenge in our community today. When Stop Dr. Laura started, you know, I ended up sitting down talking to them, and at the end, we went to meetings together with affiliate stations that were going to air Dr. Laura. And honestly, it was like, you know, there's good cop, bad cop. This was bad cop, worse cop. This was like, they had to deal with me. And if they didn't, they weren't listening to me, they were going to have to deal with Robin Tyler. And she's a badass. You know, like, she's going to be out there. I mean, I'm going to be out there protesting too, but like, she's really going to be out there, you know. So it's very interesting how I don't, to see that happening as much today, and it's unfortunate because it really can be a smart, effective way to leverage the diversity of opinions in the community about how we do something. We're a very diverse community. We all have our solutions and tactics and ways of doing things, and they differ, but that doesn't mean that anyone is, you know, better, worse, or more effective. When we do them together is when it works the best.
Absolutely. I want to hit you with one more RuPaul question, and then I want to move on to trans bodies, trans cells, because I really want to get into that. But one thing I wanted to ask you before we get into that is, where do you think that the community, in other words, not necessarily the big organizations like GLAAD, but what should, you know, people listening to this show, average folks, average trans folks, allies, people who want to get involved with this effort, what should they be focusing on?
I think what they should be focusing on is letting Logo know how they feel. Because the reality is that what these folks listen to, I mean, I always joke that the only place they hear from is their wallet. And that's really true. You know, it's true, actually, whether you're talking about a Dr. Laura or whether you're talking about someone who is our friend, you know, in quotation marks, there's something not considered RuPaul's friend. But, I mean, I think, you know, there are different levels of understanding and intent. I mean, I think somebody really needs to sit down with RuPaul and talk to him about this in a way that maybe no one has before, or because they're scared to, or whatever. But somebody's got to do it. I mean, to the average person out there, I'd let Logo know that you're not going to watch Logo anymore if you do watch, that you're going to, you know, see who advertises and not patronize those advertisers, that you're going to express your opinions directly to the show's producers. It's, I mean, we have access on the internet now to information that we never did before. And we have access on social media. People can blog, get their friends to you know, post things on Facebook. I mean, it's really incredible what one person can do now. And that's what I would encourage people to do. Let your voice be heard and you know, show you put your money where your mouth is when it comes to who you support. Support the things that are good, and if you're offended by something, let them know and don't support them.
Absolutely. Okay, I want to talk about, also, we had you on because you are you an editor or a contributor? I'm not sure, of Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, which is an anthology.
I am a very, very, very lucky publicist to be working on this project.
Oh, you are the publisher? Oh, very cool.
My girlfriend actually edited a few chapters, which was kind of cool.
Talk about what this is about, because I remember when I was a kid, I remember that my mom had on her bookshelf a book called Our Bodies, Ourselves. And it was always there when I was a kid. I never knew what it was about. But I know it was this is kind of a progression from that book. Could you talk and tell us a little bit about what this is about?
It absolutely is. In 1973, Our Bodies, Ourselves came out. And really, I think, revolutionized things, particularly for younger women, but for women. No one had ever written a book that was affirming of women's bodies, talked about women's health, talked about issues important to women, you know, across the board, and spoke, you know, to women directly from a feminist perspective. And so a group of people, including the main editor of the book, Laura Erickson Schroff, went to the folks who did Our Bodies Ourselves and said, hey, we're interested in doing this, a book called Trans Bodies, Trans Selves, a resource for the transgender community. And they were thrilled. They were tickled. They thought it was about time. And they were incredibly supportive and even to the point of being, like, helpful and sort of really putting, a behemoth like this together. This thing is 600 pages. I'm actually trying to pick it up with one hand here in my house. But it's amazing. It's not one of those, like, you read it cover to cover. But it's an incredible resource. And I cannot imagine what the reaction will be like for, whatever the age is, but for young and older trans folks who are coming out, to be able to find this resource and open this book up and be able to not just see themselves, but to say, okay, well, you know, how do I reconcile my faith beliefs? How do I deal with relationships and family? How do I, you know, think about my health and wellness? How do I, you know, find my community? How do I find support? And it's really an incredible piece of work. It's being published by Oxford University Press, which is incredible. It's going to have tremendous distribution. This will be accessible to the general public at a very, very reasonable rate as an ebook, and otherwise, it doesn't come out till late May. May 20th in New York City, we'll be having a book launch event at the Oxford building in New York City. And, you know, if you read the contributors list and the editors list, I mean, it's just a who's who. I mean, they just...
Yeah, I was just about to go there. Some amazing names here. Courtney Ryan Ziegler, all these guys, Mickey Gilbert,
Shannon Minter,
Toby Hill-Meyer, Kyla Broadus, Shannon Minter. I mean, some really significant names in this community.
Yep, Maddie Deutsch. I mean, they went and got, you know, the experts in every field to actually do the writing. They had dozens of individuals. In fact, as I was saying, my girlfriend edited a couple of chapters. They had a weekend at the Oxford building where, you know, dozens of people came to help edit the publication. It looks beautiful. It's going to be, you know, available fairly soon. You can pre-order it if you go to transbodies.com. They're making, it's like $20-something. I think it's really accessible for what it is, especially to the general public. And I think this is going to be very... just very groundbreaking beyond even the trans community. I think there's so many folks out there who have family members, friends, coworkers, people in their lives who are transgender, and they want to better understand, they want to have more information, they want to educate themselves. And this is, I've been doing this a long time, I've never seen anything like this, and I'm really just thrilled that they've brought me on to help with publicity, because I think that, you know, getting the word out on this is more than just PR media. It's a public service.
Yeah, I agree with you, because I'll tell you, you know, you sent me a sampler with some of the stuff, and I was reading. I didn't have a lot of time to get into it because I've been going crazy with this show. But, you know, as I was reading stuff, you know what I thought to myself? I said, this is the book that I wish I could have bought out.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to say that. I think a lot of them. And there are also a whole generation of young people that I know that are going to say, good, this is really going to be helpful now, because I've been waiting for something like this.
But
for those, for those who are, of my generation, our generation, are going to say, wow, wouldn't this have been incredible?
It's both of ours. You know, we are, you know, and what the heck? I mean, I've always been concerned that there's a concern for trans history sometimes. You know, my best endorsement that I can give is I'm buying a copy of this, okay, for myself, because
there you go.
It's the best endorsement I can give, because I'm going to plunk down the money for this. This is incredible. You know, I'm getting myself a hard copy. I'm not even going for the electronic.
Well,
I'm going for a hard copy.
I will get your hard copy and come to New York and come to the launch party. but I have to say,
I absolutely
what you said
will.
About
Let
the history.
Send me the information. Maybe we can even work out a way to promote it on the show when the launch party is, and see if we can get some local trans folks to show up.
Absolutely. I think that what you just brought up around history, though, I really wanted to address. It's really interesting because there is a really wide range of ages of the writers in here and the issues in here, and I think that's important. And there is a history piece. When and I have to give a shout out to my new friend that I just met her recently, Gina Rosero, who is from the Philippines, who is a transgender woman, did the first TED Talk about trans issues, came out. And if you watch the TED Talk, I think 500,000 people, or more than 500,000 people, have seen it since it got posted Monday. One of the things she did very intentionally was to talk about some history. And the image that I took from the video that I just loved the most was this image of her sort of turned and kind of gesturing toward the screen. And on the screen was this awesome split shot of Marsha P. Johnson and Sylvia Rivera. And, you know, at the TED conference in Vancouver, and then, you know, and then millions of people will see this. And I was just so thrilled because I remember when I was at GLAAD in D.C. still, before I moved to New York many years ago, we had an event. It was a history exhibit that I think The Advocate was doing. And Sylvia Rivera came down from New York. Jessica Xavier, who I was talking about before, was friendly with her. We managed to track her down. And she came down, and it was really an extraordinary experience for everyone. I'm a big history person as well. I think we don't honor we don't honor people who are doing stuff now, never mind historically. And I think that you touched on something really important for folks in the audience. And I love that image of Gina making sure that people understood that she comes from a long history of folks who have fought and died, frankly, for the rights of trans people and the right to live your lives openly and safely. And it was really, really wonderful. I don't know if you knew that, so let's make sure you knew that, because
absolutely, because the truth is, I've heard about the TED Talk, but I had not yet gotten the chance to see it. I've just been so busy over the last couple of days. And just talking about Sylvia Rivera, I think I've mentioned this on the show before. One time I was literally 6 months out, and I went to an activist meeting in New York, and this was, I guess it had to be 2001 or so, and Sylvia Rivera, who was very close to the end of her life at that point, was brought into the meeting, and it was a meeting of trans people, and it was like as if the room just fell silent, and she walked in, and you could have heard a pin drop. I mean, this woman, frail, had to be escorted, commanded that room in a way that I have never seen.
Just, I work with Edie Windsor, who's 84, and, she's a little frail, but, she brings it together for events, and she's really incredible, but she'll command a room in the same way. I mean, it's respect for your elders is not something you just learn at home, which I did, but, it's really, honestly, in this community, it's really nice to see that, occasionally we have the wherewithal to really honor and, pull it together for the folks who
I think that's so important. Yeah. Kathy, I want to say thank you for coming on and talking to us. This has been really terrific. I hope you'll come on again and talk to us, because this was so much fun.
Absolutely. Anytime you like. I would love it.
Oh, you bet. I want to talk media. I want to talk more about trans bodies, trans selves when there's something to talk about with this. And who knows? What else? Whatever. But we will definitely have you on again. Thank you so much for coming on.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Have a great night.
All right. Goodbye. All right. And that was Kathy Renna, who, of course, is a well-respected LGBT PR strategist. She is a former spokesperson for GLAAD, where their first news media director. And wow, I love her. I think she's awesome. I've known her a few years. And I encourage you. I really do. I encourage you that if you can swing it. I mean, I know there's people who have money issues and all that, but if you can afford to pick up a copy of this book, I recommend it. If you are trans, and particularly, and not even so much trans women, because if you're just a trans person and you want to understand, make it a point to pick up this book. Even if you're getting the electronic copy, which is much cheaper, or you get the full book, to pick up this book. It is worthwhile. You will not be disappointed. All right. We are going to go to our final break of the evening. It is Anthony and the Johnsons with perfect day.
Just a perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun.
I'm the voice of spring. I bring you some little goodies from the forest. You want them.
All right, we are back. It's the Rebecca Giroir Show. Thanks for sticking around. And, wow, what a great show. I thought we heard some really great stuff tonight, particularly some of the things that I thought were particularly important was these guys broke news tonight, okay? Rich Ferraro and Teek Milan of GLAAD, they broke news tonight. Basically, what they were saying was that there is going to be some kind of an effort involving trans women and drag queens to make the point. And Teek was saying that he felt it was going to be something that was lighthearted, making the point. I mean, I'll leave that kind of thing to the experts who know best how to approach that sort of thing. I think that's a great idea. I think that's the appropriate tone for GLAAD to take as an organization. That, you know, hey guys, come on, you know, go on, let's go. We're going to nudge you about this. We're going to, you know, and they leave it up to people like me to throw the bombs. Okay, I mean, yeah, it's like my article for Bolerico in the Huffington Post. You know, those are the kind of articles that and this show. Let's be honest here. Where, yeah, I drop those bombs. I'm the one who comes out and you know, I don't mince words. And I, you know, but you can't do that when you're trying to deal with, you know, business to business, you know, activist to company. That kind of thing is not always the appropriate tactic to take. And I think part of the issue that, trans folks have with the way that this has been handled, and let me key phrase up until now, key phrase, okay, I think is that trans people and trans women in particular, let's be honest, are pissed off and they're angry and they want to do something to stop this. And I think that you know, when we see when we saw what I think was really the worst thing. I mean, if GLAAD had come out at the beginning of this and said, yeah, all right, we're aware, we understand what's going on, we're working on it. If they had done that like 1 or 2 days after this story broke, the first time that this female, shemale, bigoted garbage was on the air, that they had come out and said, yes, we're on it, just hang on, we're on it, I think that would have been better. Because the fact that we got nothing, basically, I mean, very, very little, let's put it that way, from these folks for almost 2 weeks. That's, I think, where they went wrong, in my opinion, is I think they should have come to the community sooner. I mean, I needless to say, I was certainly aggressive in trying to get them on the show and get into what was going on. And obviously, they responded. They were here. They talked to us, you know. But here we are. This is 3 weeks after this story has broken. And, you know, I think, frankly, I think Kathy was right. They took too long here. Okay. And let's be honest. Okay. If we're to be completely honest here, legitimately, GLAAD should have been on this 2 years ago when people like me were writing about it, when he spewed his stupidity on the Michelangelo Signorelli show 2 years ago. They should have been on this and they weren't. Okay? And you know what? This is not a bash at all. Okay? Every organization, every person, every activist makes errors in judgment. And you and I may say, you know what? You should have been out there 2 years ago. Well, you know, 2 years ago, you don't know what was going on at GLAAD. And I'm not saying that that's an excuse, because I don't think it is, honestly. I think they should have been on this. I think if they had been, maybe we wouldn't be where we are today. Really. But let's also be honest. I think, and you know what? On the one hand, I have sympathy for GLAAD and other activists in that genre on certain things, and yet not so much. Because I think, frankly, I think they should have seen this coming. I think they're too smart and too good at what they do not to have. And I think they should have been more willing to take this on before it got out of control, before trans women, okay? I mean, and that's what it is because of their delay, I think. What happened was this started happening organically without their help, and they didn't know what to do because all of a sudden Janet Mock is speaking up, Laverne Cox is speaking up, Carmen Carrera is speaking up, people are standing with them. There is an entire movement organically springing up around these issues, and GLAAD was not ready for that. And here's the thing. I don't think they were. I really don't think that they were prepared for trans women to say, you know what? Fuck you. We're tired of waiting. We're tired of being treated like crap. We just are. And frankly, I think, you know, I mean, these kind of things are organic. They're hard to predict. Who would have known that Laverne Cox and Carmen Carrera were going to go on Katie Couric at a certain time, and Janet Mock with Piers Morgan? Who knew that? But you know what? This is an organization, and again, not bashing, constructive criticism here. This was something I think that an organization with the people who are as smart and as good at the jobs that they do at this organization should have been more conscious of where the community was on this and where they needed to be on this. And I think they kind of hoped in a way that, you know, maybe this would go away. I suspect that, and I don't mean, and again, I'm not bashing here. Okay, but I think that they felt that as long as people weren't furious, well, you know, everybody loves the show, everybody loves RuPaul, let's just, you know, kind of not talk about that. Because, well, you know, everybody loves the show, and a lot of people who love the show give us very, very large checks every year, and we don't want to piss them off. I wouldn't go and accuse anybody of that specifically. But yeah, I think when your major donors say, no, we like this guy, we support him, we don't want you going after him, and these are folks who are writing major, you know, 6- and 7-figure checks to this organization, I think that can't help but have an influence. And frankly, from what I saw, from the comments, from the responses to my articles, to other articles, there is a clear segment of this community, mostly gay men, at least from what I saw anyway, who are like, fuck you. RuPaul can do whatever he wants because he's RuPaul and he's our celebrity and we love him. So fuck you. We don't give a shit. We're going to watch him and support him because he's great. And I don't care what he says because it's not my problem. I think that's really the attitude. I know people are saying, oh, you know, you're being unfair. No, I'm not being unfair. I think that's exactly what it is. I think there is a large segment of this community, gay men mostly, and I'm sorry, but it is. Let's be honest. It is. It is gay men who have an attitude of, fuck you, why is this my problem? I mean, really. I mean, we've been dealing with that from the Human Rights Campaign for 30 years. Okay, now, they finally, HRC, just like GLAAD, finally saw the writing on the wall, and they said, you know what? This is no longer acceptable. This kind of behavior puts us behind the curve of where the community is. And I think HRC has come to understand that. I think GLAAD has come to understand that. But the difference between HRC and GLAAD, and you know, I know there are people who have been making this comparison here. but I don't think it's necessarily a fair one. Because HRC, the people who are lying to us and misrepresenting the truth and double dealing, those were the folks in that organization, the Joe Salmonises and the David Smiths and the people who were literally lying to our community, lying to our community's representative, Donna Rose, who was on the board, lying and misrepresenting and trying to pretend that they supported trans people when in fact they really did not. That is very, very different from what the situation was with GLAAD. Nobody was saying that the people at GLAAD were bad people or that they were liars. None of that. There is no criticism that I am aware of directly against any individual or particular act by the people at GLAAD that was at heart here. What was the anger was the response time. Because it was exactly the opposite. People were angry at HRC because they didn't do anything. People were angry at GLAAD because they weren't doing what they do quickly enough. Big difference there, okay? People were not expecting HRC to stand up for them. They were expecting them to stand against them, which is exactly what they did. GLAAD was, you're not standing up for us quickly enough. You're not stepping up. You're not taking the public podium. You know, and one person, I have to say one person, and I'm not going to say who this is, but one person I was talking with said, you know, it's not all about being on your show, Becky. I said, no, it's not. My show, this is the medium. This is the way we get the information to you. It's not about the show. It's about being up front with the community and letting them know, letting us know, how you are advocating these kinds of issues in our name. And just being, communicating, opening the lines. And I think that's what really angered trans folks, because it's a throwback to the days of HRC in the sense that we never knew HRC would never come down from their ivory tower and speak with us. They would simply say, this is what we're doing. And if you don't like it, fine, we'll take our ball and go home. I mean, that's what they were doing. And bear in mind, I should also point out, just for the sake, because I don't want anybody to tune in and think that I'm like in the middle of bashing HRC for something they're doing now. This is about 2007 HRC. Okay, this is not about today's HRC. They have made progress. They need to make a lot more, but there is an effort being made there. It is recognized. It is appreciated. I just saw an email from Chad Griffin earlier today. Let me see if I can find that. I don't know if I may have lost it or deleted it or something. But basically, I'll just recap what it said. Basically, it was, oh, wait a minute, I found it. Oh, wait, is that it? Yes. Okay. I want to read this. I want to read a little part of this because I thought this was, it's encouraging. It's encouraging to see. This is from the Human Rights Campaign. It's one of those emails, you know, that they send out, take action, you know, send us money, blah, 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 blah. Okay. But it's Dear Rebecca, naturally, says, and this is Chad Griffin signed this letter, so this is Chad's words here. Why is anyone still debating this? Nearly 7 in 10 Americans, including 56% of Republicans, believe that the government should guarantee that no one should be handed a pink slip just for being lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender. But the U.S. House has yet to act. That's where you come in. We're leading a massive grassroots effort. Now, this is interesting. To pass the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in the U.S. House, and your voice is our most powerful weapon. From our champion lawmakers to those who have yet to support ENDA, every member of the House needs to hear from us right now to show the majority of Americans they want to build, move this bill forward. Then it has a link for me to thank Rush Holt for being a champion of ENDA, which is kind of, for me, if you know anything about Rush Holt, it's kind of like thanking the sky for being blue. Okay, this guy has been such a champion and such an unfailing pillar of progressive support. Okay, this Rush Holt, he was one of the guys who in 2007, when good old Barney Frank and Nancy Pelosi were throwing the transgender community under the bus on the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, okay, Rush Holt, along with six other Democrats in the House, refused to sponsor it because it did not include protections for transgender people. This guy is a leader, and he is a true progressive champion. And I will tell you, I am incredibly sad that he has announced his retirement at the end of this term. It is personally disappointing for me. There are several people who are interested in getting his seat, and I frankly, I don't know the records of most of them. I need to do more research. I mean, you know, I'm kind of ashamed of myself there that I haven't done more on that. I should. so busy with dealing with trans issues, I, like, you know, should also focus on, like, the people who are representing my own district here in New Jersey. But again, Rush Holt is—he's a guy who you never have to worry about where Rush Holt is on our issues. He is always on our side. And the truth is I mean, I'm sure these other candidates are good. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I need to know more. But in any case, so they ask you to thank Rush Holt, and basically it goes on to another spiel, where it says, you know, you're going to make a difference, yada, yada, usual stuff like that. But here's the interesting part. And I thought that this was interesting. I think it deserves our support. And this is why I mentioned it on the air now. Okay. Check this out. HRC is the lead partner in Americans for Workplace Opportunity, the bipartisan campaign to pass ENDA. We won an amazing victory for ENDA in the Senate. Well, it would be more amazing if they actually recognized that it happened in the House, but yeah. And now, listen to this. We've committed $1.3 million to the $2.3 million effort to pass it in the House, which will focus on 30 congressional districts in 21 states, convincing key representatives to vote for equality in the workplace. And then it goes on to you know, the usual, you know, support us, blah, blah, blah. There's also, it's interesting. Now, this I'm not sure I knew. I think I suspected. I may have read it somewhere. But this may be recent. This may be news. The House, he said, HRC apparently commissioned a GOP pollster to conduct a survey that found over 50% of the GOP, apparently, support for ENDA in every single state. And they've signed on over 100 businesses, and they released a study showing that no GOP legislator who ever voted for workplace protections lost their reelection bid because of their vote. You see, you know why I wanted to tell you about this tonight? And you know me, I don't read these things usually on the air. But I want to point this out. All that stuff that I talked about, Americans for Workplace Opportunity, $1.3 million, okay, surveys that show you the Republican, you know, give you good information. This, HRC, this is what we need from you. We need money. We need effort. We need information. We need you doing this stuff. Kudos to you. I'm saying it. Yeah, you heard me. Kudos to HRC for making this effort. $1.3 million. That's a significant amount of money. I hope they put in more. you know, they're conducting surveys. Okay? Well, I mean, that's an important point. More than 50% of GOP of Republicans support ENDA in every single state. That's information we can use. Signing on leading businesses, that's something we can use. Studies that show that no GOP legislator who ever voted for LGBT workplace protections lost their reelection bid, that's stuff we can use. This is how HRC should be doing things. And I am so glad to see that they are really making an effort here. And you know, of course, there's always space to do more. Always. I don't care how much you invest. I don't care how much time. There's always more you can do until we have that law on the books. But this is exactly what an organization like the Human Rights Campaign should be doing. And, you know, I'll tell you, and I'm just going to say this on the air. What the hell? I have no idea if anyone from HRC is listening or not. But just in case they are, what the heck? I tried a while back to get Chad Griffin to come on the show. But at the time I sent the email, their communications director was on vacation. And I have a feeling it probably got lost in the shuffle because he's a busy guy. And, I'm sure he gets emails like that all the time. And frankly, you know, it probably just got lost. And frankly, I did not pursue it because I got involved with other stuff. I had other guests to worry about and other things to do. And I just didn't get back to it. I just didn't get back to it. So it's partially on me. In fact, it's mainly on me because I'm the one who hosts this show. I'm the one who invites the guests. So if I didn't pursue it, it's my fault. Okay. And I take full responsibility on that. However, I am going to try again. I am going to try again. I want Chad to come on. I want him to tell us, you know, because I know there's so much still in this community. There is still so much distrust of HRC. And I'm not saying it's not deserved. Don't get me wrong. Okay, particularly since we have seen in the past that HRC has made an effort on trans issues that turned out to, well, not last. And not be as enthusiastic and not be, you know, they talked a good game, but they haven't followed through. When you release a press release that says we're punking down $1.3 million, when we're doing this and you release press, that tends to add credibility to me, because if you're going public with it, then you want the people to know. I want to see, because we have been waiting for years to see what happens when the most powerful and wealthy LGBT civil rights organization in the country turns their guns on ENDA full force. And what I am hoping, and I'd say this as somebody who has been battling in the trenches on this for a long, long time. Please, it's like we could taste it. This is what we need. But there is one criticism, and you know it was coming. You know I had to. There had to be one thing, right? But I have to level one criticism at the Human Rights Campaign. It is not an HRC criticism. It is a policy criticism that Tico Almeida of Freedom to Work, we've had him on the show, is frankly also guilty of. In fact, one could argue that he is most responsible because he actually was the author of this. There is a religious exemption that has been recently placed into ENDA that is so broad, it basically gives a backdoor to discrimination for anybody who says religion. The problem is, and I know that Tico knows this, and I know that HRC knows this, that it was that religious exemption that enabled ENDA to pass the Senate. Seriously. If that exemption had not been in the bill, I don't think we might have just cleared it. But would we have cleared it with 10 Republicans? I don't think so. So there's a lot of people, and I include myself here, I don't like this exemption. I don't like it at all. It feels to me like the Massachusetts law that technically has protections but has such huge holes in it that anybody who really wants to discriminate against a trans person or a gay person, well, not a gay person in Massachusetts, because, of course, they have real rights there instead of fake pseudo rights like we have there. But It'll be like that for gays and lesbians and trans people, where you'll have a law that's technically on the books, but it's so toothless and so removed of any real teeth and any real ability to prevent discrimination that it will be virtually useless. And you know what? What's the point of a useless law? What's the point of a law that you can't take advantage of to protect your rights? And that's what I think this is. It's going to be a bill that's like all show. You know, I mean, that's my problem with this. That is really my concern. I think we have to deal with this religious exemption. And I think that by the time this comes up, because I don't care what the White House says. I don't care what Jay Carney, the liar, says. And he is. Go read the Washington Blade. There's a picture of Jay Carney. I forget what the title of this article is. But basically, he's lying. He's bullshitting his ass off, this guy. Unbelievable crap. Let me see if I can find this here. Hang on a second. Washington. Oops. I'm not writing this correctly. Okay. W. There we go. Okay. Let's see if I can find this here. Here we go. The name of the article is, and I'm just going to cover this because we're almost out of time, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. And I may not spend any time if this article, there it goes. Okay. Well, apparently, listen to this. I mean, is this bullshit or what? It says, end of passage would make the executive order redundant. Either the guy is an idiot or he's a liar. One of the two. And I don't believe he's an idiot. I really don't. You don't get to be the president's press secretary by being an idiot. He knows what he's saying. He's just lying. Okay? So it would be redundant, which is a lie, because there are protections in the executive order that President Obama still hasn't signed and in ENDA that are mutually exclusive. They're different. So this guy has now gone into bullshit mode. I mean, he's not even making credible excuses anymore. He's not even trying. It's just bullshitting his ass off. I mean, here, listen to what he said. Here's the quote. I think if the law passed, and I'm not a lawyer. Oh, you bet your ass you're not. I haven't read every sentence of the law. I don't think you've read any sentence of the law, but that's neither here nor there. But I think if a law passed that broadly banned this kind of employment discrimination, it would make redundant an executive order, which pretty much every activist in the country said is utter bullshit. Anyway, guess what? What do you know? We're out of time. Again, where does it go? Oh, my God. I want to say thank you to Rich Ferraro. I want to say thank you to Teek Milan. I want to say thank you to Kathy Renna for great interviews tonight. I want to say thank you, as always, to the ever-amazing Mr. Mike Scott for turning my knob so I can twist yours. And I want to say thank you to you for supporting this media, for tuning in every week. And we will catch you next week. Have a good night, everybody.
Human, now monsters, monsters to be pitied, monsters to be despised from the innermost depths of the world.